Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the AQ podcast. All the A's to your Q's, the answers to your questions with your host, Dr. Ashley Queen, a podcast by a scientist for people who cannot be defined by a box. We are more than what's expected of us. A go-to place to discuss controversial topics, demystifying science and STEM, and how financial health can help you realize all your diverse dreams. Don't be boring and basic, be entertaining and memorable. I'm so excited for today's episode. We have a very special guest. We are welcoming Demetra Lucas. She hails from Fairfield, California, and currently is based in Austin, Texas. She's an educator, a leader, a writer, and a poet. So welcome, Demetra. So happy to have you here today.
Hello, hello, good rising. Thank you for having me, Dr. Queen.
Yes, yes, yes. So exciting. And so in this episode, we're discussing energy and Demetra's latest work, Listen to Me, a collection of poetry and prose. And so what a better way to start this and set the tone than to share a selection of your work. So with that said, Demetra, you have the floor.
So this one is titled Listen to Me. Listen to me. Listen to me for understanding. Understanding what I mean when I say, and even what I mean when I may say differently. Understanding of the message, feelings, in between my lines. Understanding where I'm coming from to help you understand where it is I'm going. Understand that my words tell no lies. Understand that I'm already knowing I got bold, razor blade, slick with its ass. Listen to me when I'm mad. Listen to me yell, listen to me shout. Listen to me tell you how it is, what it ain't, and let's work on what it's gonna be.
I love it. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you. And you know, it's, you know, the energy that I received just from hearing that, you know, it's a great way to kick off the conversation and discussing energy and just exactly, you know, what your perspective is on energy and how, you know, we exchange that with each other. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So energy, you know, cannot be created nor destroyed. I feel that energy is very much present in all that we do and in our core. You know, from being quarantined off and on for the past couple years, I really had a deep dive into, you know, the main energy sources, how we feel and how we feel things that may not be able to be explained by word or by image. It's just a feeling. Energy is the heat that you feel from the sun. It's the wind that you feel roller skating. Energy is the mood, walking into a room and being able to, you know, tell if there's good or bad or funky energy. Energy, I feel, can be felt through silence. Energy can be felt even when someone feels as though they're bottling everything in.
I love that, the imagery that you created just by saying that created some type of energy. I love that. So, you know, I know a lot of times people refer to their chakras and how balancing your chakras impacts your day-to-day life and your energy. Do you know a bit about that you can share with me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so from, you know, my brief self-research, I've learned that, you know, as humans, we have 7 main energy sources at different points of our body. They, you know, are connected to different things that we feel or think. There's the root chakra, the sacral chakra, solar plexus, heart chakra, the throat, the third eye, and the crown. There's also, you know, colors and foods associated with each of these energy sources. And I believe it just stems back to, you know, indigenous practices and things that our ancestors or others, people's ancestors practiced or had more depth of knowledge in prior to, you know, colonization and imperialism.
Yeah. You know, I just had to ask them, like, Ashley, don't forget to ask that question. Don't forget to ask that question. Because I know, you know, in reality, a lot of people really just don't understand. They don't understand. And it's something that's not really discussed or considered in our everyday lives. And I know for you in particular that when you wrote Listen to Me, you were referring to a certain chakra. And what chakra was that?
Yes, so this piece of work is an ode to those, to the throat chakra. It's an ode to those surviving with blocked or unbalanced throat chakras, those who, you know, have difficulty expressing themselves or even communicating with others. I feel like this was one of my first leaps in the public space of deconstructing that patriarchal narrative of little girls are supposed to be seen and not heard. So this book, it's dedicated to the throat chakra.
You know, that's powerful. You know, I want to dive deeper into what it means to communicate. I know some of the elements that you touched in your work was what it means to talk to children, to friends, family, love interests, your ancestors, and to God, and how communication is literally the fabric of human interaction. Yet so many don't prioritize expressing it and internalizing it effectively. And, you know, with that said, you know, before we get into your actual work, you know, I want to, you know, get to know a little bit more about you. Like, tell me about yourself, how you got into writing poetry, and what is your process to self-publishing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, like you said, I'm originally from Fairfield, California. It's a small town in between Sacramento and San Francisco. I was handed a blue composition notebook. Ironic or divine timing that it was blue, being that blue is associated with the throat chakra. So I've been writing and journaling since middle school. When I was a child, I liked reading all different types of genres, and so I wanted to become an author. During the time of me starting undergrad, I was introduced to spoken word and poetry due to an on-campus student org, Speaks, spoken word and poetry expressed by all kinds. So I started, you know, challenging myself to transition from writing my feelings and thoughts into affirmations, into poems, and into spoken word pieces. So around like 2014, 2015 is when I started writing poems, and it just developed from there. I, you know, aspire to publish, you know, novels based on novels based on true events.
So talking to friends, I know we mentioned, you know, the importance of communication and being able to communicate with others. Where is it in friendships where you feel like individuals can have challenges in communication, or, you know, the value of friendship? There's so many things to consider there, you know, what somebody means to you, the role they play in your life. And then sometimes those circumstances change over time. Like, can you tell me a little bit more about, you know, what you wanted to tap into here when you want to express talking to your friends?
Yeah, so I think for me, cultivating genuine and long-lasting friendships has, you know, always been a challenge. And so just developing friendships and wanting to expand my friendships and relationships as an adult became even more challenging. And I think that, you know, it's easy to talk to your friends about, you know, going out, what you did last night, who you're interested in, your daily life. but then it could be harder depending on that level of friendship, expressing, you know, feelings of being left out or not feeling as though the friendship is valued on the other's end, or even talking about like difficulties that you're experiencing in life. If you're not able to express that to your friend, then that could change, you know, the trajectory of the relationship. If you're not feeling up, you're going through a low moment, but you don't express that, it could be seen as someone, you know, either isolating themselves, withdrawing from the friendship, or not wanting to uphold that friendship. So I think it's more of when, you know, the difficult and challenging conversations arise, that it can be, it can go differently than planned or not feel the same.
Yeah, that's so true. Like the challenge of relationships, I'm sitting here taking inventory of my life right now. So, you know, with friends, that saying that's very popular to hear is that, you know, friendships, relationships, they all have seasons. And a lot of times when people lose friendships, they'll say things like, you know, well, it was just for that season. That season came to an end and here we are now. But I do feel like maybe some of them, the seasons didn't have to end if the friends knew how to communicate with each other better and understand each other better. Because I can think about, like, I have personal friendships, friends, people I no longer speak to anymore. And I could feel it when we were distancing apart. Mm-hmm. I could feel myself resisting it, ignoring the signs, fighting against it. And I felt it. But it's so funny, some of those signs that I felt happening, or just noticing certain things, little things that were said here and there, I never actually, for one of these friends I'm referring to, I never actually confronted them on the things that I was noticing. I kind of wrote it off because we had been friends for so long. It was just like, you know, that's just her being like this. Mm-hmm. But a part of me wonders, you know, if I confronted those changes that I started to see, you know, sometimes even microaggressions, if I would have said something instead of trying to just like brush past it. Because I think a reality is when we become friends with someone, we know them to be a certain way for a certain period of time, but we don't consider the idea that people change over time, their needs change over time, their experiences change them. Mm-hmm. And so what once served your friendship no longer serves you anymore or serves them anymore.
Yeah.
And if you guys don't, I guess, continually communicate and make an intentional point to understand or overstand each other over time, that's how you start to grow apart.
Yeah. Yeah. So rooting back to communication and mm-hmm. not only just communication, but understanding what both parties are communicating.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, you know, I want to transition to talking to love interest. So when it comes to talking to love interest, you know, we can circle back to the poem that you shared in the very beginning of this podcast, and that's Listen to Me. You know, for me, you know, I just want to, I know a lot of people, when they write about things, they tend to write about things, you know, when they experience, or when they're in the midst of experiencing something. Mm-hmm. And but then others, they tend to write from a reflective standpoint. And so for yourself, do you find, and not just with the section about talking to love interests, so just in general, do you seem to feel that you write from more of a reflective standpoint, or do you write as you're experiencing it?
Mm-hmm. I would say a little bit of both. Listen to Me was a reflection piece, thinking about, you know, my past relationships as well as that communication style, different ways that I tried to communicate with them or they tried to communicate with me, and just getting to that end goal of, although we might not be understanding what we're saying or we may not agree, let's work on, you know, what it's going to be. Starstruck was more of in the moment. I was challenged by my mentor, Rob Brown, to, you know, just go at it full force and hit him with a jab each line by line. So that one, it was my feelings in the moment for who this poem was about, but it also was just reflecting on the times that I had had with them. And yeah, so they come from both. I've had, you know, moments where, you know, I'm just journaling and reflecting. I've had moments of where I start spitting the poem in the shower.
I think the showers are where everybody feels creative. Also where people can think they sang very well when they actually don't. But it's a great place to create.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just like you, that steam, water. Yeah, multiple different elements.
It's like an R&B music video. You sit your hand on the wall of the shower and start singing and writing poetry.
Yes, and then you swipe your hand down and leave your imprint on the wall.
Or if it gets real deep, you just slide all the way down to the floor and roll into a ball. Oh my gosh. Only when I allow my hair to get wet. But yeah, But no, I really love the selection that you put in this particular part of your collection. It's very, you can tell it's very thoughtful. And I don't want to tap into it too much because I want individuals to, you know, seek this out and read this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'll transition next to talking to family. Mm-hmm. So with talking to family, you know, family is such a sensitive thing for people. Like, everyone's family is different. We have close families, we have estranged families, we have families that have a very strange dynamic. And because of that, you know, a lot of times people don't understand how others interact with their family because we all have different experiences. But for yourself, you know, how would you describe your family experience?
Well, isn't that a loaded question? I would describe my family experience to be a mixed salad. You can see all the different parts and pieces and what is being put together. Not your traditional salad, I would say. For sure there are some pepperoncinis and jalapenos in this family salad.
Spicy.
Yeah, it's been a lot of learning, and I feel that me understanding my family has only come full circle after becoming an adult and being able to be in those conversations that, you know, as a child, you weren't able to be around. You know, you had to go out and play with the other kids. And so my family is very dynamic, and individuals in my family have very strong personalities, strong opinions, and strong voices.
You know, that's so true. Like, I feel like in my adulthood, you know, as I transcended my 20s and entered my 30s, like, there's so much more that I can reflect back on and understand that I never understood in my, you know, younger days, grade school, things like that. And like, even the other day, you know, me being in my early to mid 30s, I'm like, hold on now, like, so my parents were this age when I was this age, and like, I used to look at them as like so freaking old, like, but now I'm like, I'm not old, I don't feel old, I still feel like I'm in college inside of my brain. And I'm like, how do my parents at my age have three wild little girls running around and still feel youthful inside and like try to balance all that, like just little things like that. I'm like, how the heck did they do that? Because right now I'm just like, I can't. Mm-hmm. But just to understand that dynamic and how they work to take care of us so well. And, you know, I really commend that. But, you know, as a kid, you don't understand that. You don't see that. You don't understand the nuances, the things they had to give up at certain points to make sure that, you know, we were taken care of and okay. So,
yeah. Didn't really see or understand the emotion that may have been shown or may not have been shown.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so, you know, looking at your selections for this, you know, I really, all of them were very well thought out, very well put together. And your poem, Felt Like My Father's Only Child, that one was very speaking because arguably I'm a daddy's girl. So, like, I was instantly drawn to that, you know. Do you want to tell me a little bit about that poem?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's titled, in parentheses, Felt Like, in parentheses, My Father's Only Child, because that, I was raised, you know, as I believe, to believe that I was my dad's only child. I was his first daughter, his first and only born, and, you know, that came to an end, I want to say in 2017, him and my uncles were helping me move. And we went out to dinner. We had a couple drinks. I guess he just had some liquid courage, because on the ride home, he told me that I had a brother who lived in Texas. He was in college. And then I had a younger sister who was about 17, 16 years old at the time, living in a city right over from where I grew up. So, you know, like growing up, I always felt like my dad's only child. He had never told me about any of my siblings. I did hear, you know, a little inkling from my mom about my older brother, but because my dad never mentioned it, I just assumed it to not be true. So this, you know, I learned in adulthood, along with a lot of other things about my dad, the way he lived, reasons why I may not have seen him at time periods during my childhood, reasons why, you know, he is the way he is today. And so that one was, you know, a big reflective piece as well of just my relationship with my dad from being a little girl to a young woman.
Yeah. So how does that feel? I have to ask, like, do you still feel like you're his only child? Did that, like, change your whole perspective? Because you pretty much spent your almost whole life up until this point feeling that way? Or did it kind of shift things?
Uh-huh. It did shift things. The things being, you know, now I had an older brother who was 5 months older than me. And then a younger sister. I think it shifted things, you know, for the better. I feel like the bond between my father and I didn't change. But just me knowing, you know, that he had other kids, it made me, you know, understand that I wasn't his only child.
Yeah. And then, you know, that kind of speaks back to, you know, what you said about talking to a child or talking to, you know, family. And I wonder, you know, had you have learned this at a younger age where you weren't as emotionally mature, like, would you have reacted the same way? It's almost like, you know, everything has a time and place for when it happens in life. And maybe the positive outlook that you have on all this and, you know, not being fazed by it in a way that maybe somebody at a different stage of life might be. Because, you know, I know someone who found out a little later in life that they had a sibling and they were initially not very happy about it at all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was because, you know, for arguably all they knew is that they were the only. And so I think, you know, maybe this was the time that you were meant to find out, to put everything into balance. Just a a thought, a perspective.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. One that I agree with. You know, finding out that information can, you know, change a child's thinking or understanding of that relationship. So I think him telling me, like, at an age where I could understand it and not hold it against him was beneficial.
Yeah, for sure. Wow. Appreciate the vulnerability. Just dug into your life for a second.
Yeah, no. I feel like if anyone goes out and purchases the book, reads it, it definitely is like a dive into different aspects of my life.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's what people appreciate, like, is authenticity, especially in today's world. Not to say, not that I was alive in every, you know, era of life, of course, but it just seems like people really struggle to be authentic these days. It's all about, especially in the social media age, it's all about images and creating this illusion of who you actually are. Mm-hmm. And so it's nice to see this type of energy. It's a good thing. So, you know, to transition from that, you know, the next segment of your work is talking to myself. So what is the importance of talking to yourself, Demetra?
I believe that talking to yourself is not taboo. It is not crazy. And it shouldn't be stigmatized. I think self-talk is very vital and beneficial with, like, you know, working things out on your own prior to trying to have someone else figure it out for you. Or, you know, even if you do ask someone's opinion or advice, it's not how you feel or how you see the situation. So talking to yourself is beneficial in times of, like, self-regulating. It's beneficial in times of reflection, and also beneficial for, you know, getting to know more about who you are. I feel like whether you verbally talk to yourself in a mirror or you write it out and journal it, that's also a form of talking to yourself.
Definitely. Well, that makes me feel better because I definitely talk to myself all the time.
Yeah, no, don't feel bad. I catch myself, you know, in the car, walking down the street, and it'll just come out of my mouth. And I was like, and I'll look around to see if anyone caught it.
That's good to know. Like, I could be in the car and be like, now, hold on. Why did I say that in the meeting earlier? That was stupid, or, you know, or something like that. And I'll just start working through a whole thought. But then if I see somebody in the next car staring at me, I'll just continue talking. So it appears that I'm like on my Bluetooth. But really, I was like talking to myself the whole time. I just didn't want to look crazy. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely, I've experienced them, like, some of those calmer times. But then I've also, like, just through, like, certain heightened moments in my life, I've, you know, caught myself, you know, screaming, punching the steering wheel, and then looking over to my left and to my right, and, you know, or just crying in my car. Or just, like, you know, crying in my car, thinking about, I wonder if these people can see me cry. But you know, it's not their life. They're not dealing with what you're dealing with, so.
I've definitely done that. I could get so emotional sometimes, and, like, thankfully for me, for whatever reason, most of the time where I'll bust out crying, it'll be at nighttime. So I'm like, okay, nobody can see me. It's dark enough that they can't see this tear rolling down my cheek. Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. All right. I'm glad I'm not alone on that.
No, you're definitely not.
Well, I appreciate that, and how you have a poem entitled with your name, speaking specifically to yourself. But I like that. I like not only are you speaking to yourself, but it's also used as a way to empower yourself and emphasize everything that is you. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people don't really take the time to do that and appreciate who they are. And I think a lot of people would appreciate themselves better if they actually just took that time to self-assess.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I think sometimes people think of themselves in relation to what they've accomplished or who they are, who their family members are. But, you know, all that pushed aside, you are your being, and whether those people continue to be in your life or fall out of your life, like, you need to know who you are and understand that, you know, you're powerful in your being. Whatever your abilities or strengths are, they're specific to you.
See, I love that. That literally plays into, I guess, the whole theme or the point of my podcast. And that's because, you know, a lot of people, they just feel defined, like you said, you know, by their roles in life. Like, yeah, I'm a scientist, but that is by far not the only thing that I am. There's so many different elements to me. There's so many things that I like to do, entrepreneurship. I like to do DIY things. I will design the heck out of someone's house if they let me. Like, I love to draw when I'm inspired. You know, I love outdoors things. There's so many elements to me. But, you know, in general, people don't see me that way. They're just like, oh, Ashley, you're the scientist. Dr. Queen, tell me about this. And that's great. I appreciate it. But people just, you know, they don't see the other sides of you. And also, it's up to you to, you know, expose the other sides of you to others as well.
Yeah. Yeah, in my studies, I learned about a Black scholar, a Black woman named Kimberly Crenshaw, and she coined the term intersectionality. So I feel like in my studies, I learned about a Black scholar, a Black woman named Kimberly Crenshaw, and she coined the term intersectionality. And that, you know, opened up my thinking to all things, even outside of academia. Some people even struggle to be able to see that other people have different intersectionalities, different identities that make up who they are. They're not just a Black woman, not just a scientist. Like, they're all these things in one. And, you know, it's up to them to share that with you, but then also you to respect it when it is being shared.
That's it right there. The respect it when it's being shared. And, you know, you can't force people to appreciate it, but they can respect it, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's so true. So I guess with that, you know, what's something about you that people wouldn't, you know, otherwise expect?
That's an interesting question. What is something that people wouldn't expect? I think my rebellious teenage years, I think I can come off as like very quiet and professional or respectable. But I have, you know, a rebellious past. And also,
oh, so you're a wild child.
My mother's first. But yeah, I like to have fun. I like to do adventurous and adrenaline-seeking things. Like, I bought tickets to go skydiving for my birthday that, unfortunately, I didn't get to use. But, like, I really like adventure. And even though I'm small, I don't really don't have a fear of heights.
It's called fun size.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good. You know, I love to hear those types of things. And, you know, especially like you do come across, you know, as somebody who's very reserved, and I'm like, what does Demetra like to do for fun? So it's nice to know that if I ever need a skydiving buddy, that I can call on you.
Yes, skydiving, scuba diving.
And ruin my Megan knees all along the way.
Or strengthen them.
Yeah, true, with the swimming and scuba diving and everything. Break them down and build them back up. Oh my gosh. All right, let me stop. All right. So, you know, let's transition to the next segment of your work, and that is talking to ancestors. Mm-hmm. So, you know, tell me about that, you know, the importance of that level of communication.
Mm-hmm. This level of communication can be verbal. It can be, you know, all thoughts or spiritual. I believe that our ancestors are with us, you know, regardless of its. So I believe that our ancestors are still with us, even if they may no longer be with us in the physical realm. Mm-hmm. So just that conversation that you may be having with yourself, I believe that, you know, they're hearing you. You may not be able to get a verbal response, but, you know, I believe in the clair senses. I believe that, you know, in different signs, either in nature or things that you may be going through, that can affirm that, you know, your ancestors are listening and still with you. So writing this section, I, you know, heavily thought about my paternal grandmother who passed away the year before I was born, and how, you know, I've never had an actual conversation with her, but I feel like sometimes I'll joke about, you know, things that my other relatives have told me and be like, and just talk to her about, oh, you probably would have done the same thing, or, you know, question like, how do they view what I'm doing, or if they'd, you know, support me in decisions that I were making at that point in time in my life.
Yeah, I definitely know what you're thinking with that. Like, when I started grad school, I actually moved into my grandparents' former house, and like, mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, I'm like working on my schoolwork or anything of that sort, you know, just living day-to-day life, like I'll sometimes think like, are they proud of who I've become? Like, are they looking at me? Are they watching what I'm doing? Like, is this something that they would want to see in me? And, you know, for me, like, as a kid, you know, it was always about, you know, making my grandparents proud, because whenever you would tell them something positive about yourself, they'd be like, oh yeah, you know, they'd be like, look at, like, my paternal grandmother, she'd be like, hey, Miss Ashley, you know, tell me how your, you know, school's going. And, you know, I'd say something and I'd say, oh, I got an A in this. And they're just like, yay. So, like, part of me wonders, like, are they still, like, doing that same cheering, you know, from the other side? Like, are they watching? And it does make you sometimes mindful, like, you know, am I making, and not just, you know, my more immediate ancestors, my ancestors in general, like, pushing back further into the lineage, like, am I making them proud? Mm-hmm. Or am I moving in a direction that's, you know, most beneficial to me and to my family and for those who are influenced by me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, tell me about your section entitled Talking to God.
Mm-hmm. So this section was something that it kind of like tied everything together. When I was thinking about how I wanted to structure the book, when I wanted these poems to be, you know, speaking to a specific audience, it was all very intentional. There's 7 sections. 7, you know, representing a holy number for those who are religious. 7, you know, the 7th day being the day that God rested. So this 7th section is talking to God. I also originally thought of a subtitle as a collection of poetry, prose, and prayers, with this section being rooted in some of my prayers or some of the things I, you know, was hoping for or was praying to happen or not to happen. This section, it comes down to 2 poems. It's called The Ground for a Reason and No History, No Self. These are poems that I feel anyone can read and can see a connection of how these words can be, you know, spoken to God or in the context of spirituality, or even some religions.
Yeah, what I really appreciate about this section, it's more of a conversation with God. Mm-hmm. And just the way somebody would sit there and reflect upon, you know, what's happening in the world around them and just discussing it. And by convention, waiting to receive a better understanding or just reflection of what's going on. And I really like that perspective.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, to touch on more of like what's going on in the world around them. These are kind of topics that others can be experiencing. I know for sure the last poem of No History, No Self. Mm-hmm. Everyone, you know, is aware of the police murders of Black and brown bodies. And so that was my own, you know, personal reflection of how it is I claim that Black lives matter or that I'm for this cause, yet I lack knowledge and just the simple names of those who have passed before me.
Yeah. And that's really, I really appreciate that. And I guess, you know, as we wrap this up, you know, I know in your collection, it speaks to the notion that you want to inspire others to introspectively recognize and be true to their voice. And I see that's absolutely what you have done within this collection. It's very raw, it's very authentic, it's real and something that we need to hear, not, you know, some abstract perspective of someone. Like, it's real, it's relevant to yesterday's world, today's world, and something that people can take with them into the future. And I really appreciate that. So I guess my question to you is, what's next?
Mm-hmm. So what's next is me finishing up this process of self-publishing this work. I do plan on, you know, attending more open mic events, workshops to further develop my craft and get better. I also, you know, foresee future speaking events. I feel that these poems can be utilized for deeper critical thinking. And so I'd, you know, be willing and I'd foresee, you know, this being tied into education curriculum, or even after school curriculum.
That would be great.
Yeah. Just continuing my journey.
Awesome, awesome. Well, can you tell people where they can follow your journey?
Yes, so I'm on a couple different social media platforms. I have an Instagram at Miss Meech _. So at MISSMEECH _. You can find me on Facebook at Demetra Lucas. I've even been developing my own trail, which is an online platform where you can talk about your journey and also reach out for help in certain aspects of your journey, or just look at other people's trails and connect with what they've gone through in life and see if anywhere in their trail aligns with what you're doing.
That's wonderful. Well, you know, thank you, thank you, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. You know, I really, really appreciated your insight, your input, your willingness to share your work with us today. I wish you and, you know, send you nothing but good energy, good vibes, the best, everything going forward. I can't wait to hear when this is officially published. I can share that with all the followers of the podcast. I really hope that, you know, you got something out of this conversation today. I think something that I pride myself in when it comes to this podcast is the ability to, again, not just be that scientist, but to bring that cross-functional or which you mentioned, intersectional perspective that, you know, we are more than just our jobs. You know, I can't see how anyone could not have taken away something from this conversation. And that's how I want people to approach life. And thank you again. I'm so happy to have you on today's episode.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ashley, for having me. I appreciated, you know, the conversation and your perspective. And I definitely hope that, you know, those listeners out there received something or caught something that made them reflect or think about life in a different way. Thank Absolutely. You. I appreciate your platform.
Absolutely. Thank you. And for those followers on this podcast today, just know that you can find this podcast on several different platforms. This was first powered by Anchor. And you can follow this podcast on Instagram at @the_AQ_podcast. And as always, if you ever have suggestions for episodes, if you would like to come on as a guest on a future episode, just please feel free to reach out to me, send me a message, and we can coordinate from there. So again, thank you, Demetra. Thank you so much. Happy to have you. Wishing you nothing but joy and sunshine and happiness. And you have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You have a beautiful day as well.
All right. Take care.